The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
While last week was Heart Rhythm Awareness Week, it's still important to raise awareness this week of disorders associated with your heart and to learn how to keep your heart healthy. One in four deaths caused by heart disease and stroke every year. So I'm joined by Dr. Jim O'Brien, consultant cardiologist, who's going to tell me all about taking care of your heart and what symptoms to look out for. Jim, good morning and welcome.
Pat, thanks very much.
You soldier away at the Mater.
Exactly, yeah. I'm a consultant in the Mater Private Hospital just across town.
And that's one of the centres of excellence, isn't it, for heart?
So they tell me, absolutely, yeah.
Now, talk to me about how people can monitor their heart. I mean, a lot of people have high-tech watches and all of that. Is that enough to kind of keep an eye on things?
More and more it's becoming so. I guess an important thing to know about heart rhythm is that it's a very, very common diagnosis in the population at large. About one in four people over the age of 50 are likely to suffer with the most common diagnosis being atrial fibrillation.
Now, what is that?
Atrial fibrillation is an erratic or disordered activity electrically from the upper chambers of the heart, which cause the heart to beat irregularly. And you might think, well, that doesn't sound like too big a deal on its own, except for the fact that it can actually devastate some people with horrible symptoms, and other people can suffer other significant morbidities like stroke or heart failure as a consequence of it.
Would you know you had it, or does it have to be diagnosed instrumentally? Like, would you feel it in your chest, for example, that there's something going on?
You may well. The symptoms to watch out for would be palpitations, which is just a fancy term for an awareness of one's heartbeat. So if it's beating fast, irregular or slow, it might be a reason to get yourself checked out. Other symptoms would be things like chest discomfort, disproportionate breathlessness on exertion, a tendency to dizziness that you can't rightly explain, or even loss of consciousness with no warning, which is known as syncope.
Now, people who have these smartwatches, they regularly look at their pulse, you know, they see the pulse rate. And if they go for, say, a blood oxygen reading, they may also see the feed out of the heart rhythm. Can an ordinary person look at that and say, uh-oh, I'm in trouble?
Well, I've found more and more that you can probably trust the test. So there are two main ways that you can get your diagnosis of an irregular heartbeat or atrial fibrillation. Number one, you can consult medical attention, where you can get a 10-second, 12-lead ECG, Holter monitoring, as you and I just mentioned a minute ago, or even an implantable microchip that can look at your heart for longer periods of time. But self-checks and wearables are becoming more and more used and actually are quite high fidelity. They approach about 90% sensitivity and specificity, meaning.
Before the break, or during the break, we were talking and I was asking you about, say, the Apple Watch or any of the watches. If they show that you're perfect, you probably are. But they may show you're imperfect, and that may just be kind of digital noise.
Correct, yeah. Like I said, there's about a 90% accuracy of if your smart technology tells you that you have atrial fibrillation, you almost certainly do. In exactly the same way, if it says that you do not have atrial fibrillation, you almost certainly do as well. Now, about 15% of them actually can come in unreadable or inconclusive. And in situations like that, that might be a situation where you might want to consult your primary health care provider or local cardiologist.
Now, going to a cardiologist means you probably have to do something about a condition that maybe the GP has discerned. Are GPs equipped to do that kind of simple heart check?
Yes. In fact, most patients are. Ironically, as I was sitting waiting to come in here today, I was checking my own pulse, which is something I'd recommend the population do on a regular basis.
And what
if
was
they feel
it?
Palpitations. It was high.
You That's have the effect
that,
I have on
me. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, we have that effect from you guys with white coat syndrome.
So exactly.
You have red light syndrome with
you
us.
Give me a high pulse, I give you a high blood pressure. Absolutely. Yeah.
What should it be? Because, I mean, you get, like my daughter who runs quite a bit, would have a resting heart rate overnight of 40.
Okay. Inevitably, she's just fit enough that that's her baseline heart rate, which is quite acceptable for her. The normal population would be about 60 to 100, but there's obviously outliers in both directions, which can be quite acceptable in some situations.
So,
it's
so
the
that's
irregularity
the
that you'd want to watch out for.
If you check, and I'll check now on my watch and see what I have, and it's 60.
60.
And I'm sitting here, I'm not doing anything. So how would I know whether that's good, bad or indifferent?
Well, I think you're going to make it with a pulse of 60 anyway, Pat. So, yeah, I have high hopes for you there for the rest of today's interviews. If it was irregular as opposed to regular. And actually, most smart technologies are quite good diagnostic tools from that regard. They might even quote that you actually have or have not atrial fibrillation, in which case, if atrial fibrillation was something that your watch said you probably have, it would be worth getting a consultation earlier on.
Now, talk to me about a defibrillator. You know, they have them now in many public places so that people can access them. And often it's kind of, maybe this is wrong, but it's seen as something to restart the heart. What does it actually do?
That's it, exactly. What it does is it causes a reset, if you like. So the defibrillators you're talking about are for very dangerous heart rhythm disturbances that come from the bottom chambers of the heart, which are quite a lot more debilitating and devastating for patients and need to be fixed immediately. That's why they're in the community. But there's hospital defibrillators as well that can be used in situations where atrial fibrillation has been diagnosed, the top chamber disorders. Almost like you saw in the movies where people yell clear, rubbing two paddles together and then give the patient a boost. What that does is it completely electrically stuns the heart and allows the heart's normal native electrical activity to start again afterwards.
Now, you may remember a few years ago, Tony Blair, when he was still Prime Minister of the UK, went into hospital and his deputy was told, you're PM for the duration, because his heart was going to be stopped and restarted. What were they doing there?
That probably was something called a cardioversion. A cardioversion is the means by which, in a medically supervised environment, under full anesthesia, the heart is very temporarily stopped with a really big boost of high voltage electricity, and then it just allows its own native sinus activity to take over from then on. Works about 90% of the time.
So this would, someone with a very irregular heartbeat and they want to regularize it, they do this?
This might be an offer. Now, important point that I might make just before that, Pat, before you choose to do that, I mentioned about the fact that stroke and heart failure can associate and co-locate with atrial fibrillation. Because of the not inconsiderable risk for stroke, it's always important to be offered an appropriate blood thinner to keep your blood thin enough so that the irregularly beating upper chambers don't cause the blood to coalesce and cause a clot, which could get liberated into your circulation and cause a stroke when you get the cardioversion done. So you should always seek medical consultation before listening for a cardioversion.
Okay, but someone who is given blood thinners, can that give rise to a stroke?
There's a hemorrhagic stroke, yes, that patients can sometimes be at risk for. And actually, there's, without getting too technical, different stroke and hemorrhage risk scores. And you do a little bit of a back of the napkin calculation for every new patient that approaches you and find out if a patient's risk for hemorrhage might be, you know, superlative. Above what their stroke risk is, in which case you might be just judicious about starting a blood thinner. But by and large, when you diagnose atrial fibrillation, you should be looking to anticoagulate or start a blood thinner almost every time.
Now, we read all the time of sudden athletic deaths, be it on the football field or doing races or whatever. Why does that happen in people who, are, by the very nature of the activity, are fit?
So, Pat, with a physique like yours, I imagine you do regular chin-ups. But if you were to do too many chin-ups, if you were to do too many at a time, inevitably your biceps would atrophy. Sometimes very high-intensity athletes might, in exactly the same fashion, over-exercise their heart muscle to the point that it can become scarred, tired, or start to develop heart failure. And they may not even know it because they've conditioned themselves so well aerobically with their high-intensity fitness. In situations like that, the heart might be at risk of very suddenly giving erratic and dangerous rhythm disturbances. And as we've all seen with Christian Eriksen and other football players on the field, that can lead to sudden cardiac arrests and requirement for urgent defibrillation.
And yet he was able to return to play.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a conditioning thing. It's actually, ironically, in the same breath, I'm probably going to be a cardiologist that next offers people to smoke because it seems unusual offering high-intensity athletes to detrain, but that can actually be the case sometimes. So in ultrathon runners, marathon runners, etc., sometimes in a situation where they developed atrial or ventricular rhythm disturbances as a consequence of their over-exercise, you might tailor their exercise program more to their physiological needs. So you might offer for them to come down by about 25 or maybe 50% and then reassess it at a later
Not
stage.
That Eriksen's talent did much for Manchester United this year, but that's another story. Questions. Does your expert recommend HRT for heart health as women get older?
That's a very good question, and it's actually a very difficult one to qualify. I have known that palpitations and rhythm disturbances in general can be cyclical in females. It can happen perimenstrually, and it can happen a lot more commonly in the perimenopausal period. I have found that by and large, HRT is quite safe and can regulate the hormonal imbalances that tend to precipitate these rhythm disturbances. Now, importantly, some of the hormonal replacement therapies that they give can actually trigger different heart rhythm disturbances. And I would always recommend a cardiology consultation in those instances.
Now this one, my heart sometimes skips a beat or feels like it's doing that. Is that bad for my health?
Not necessarily. I get them all the time. I'm getting them right now, in fact, and my wife has been getting them quite regularly as well. They are usually something called premature ventricular contractions, one large surging beat that you might feel just a second or two at a time. If you were getting them almost every 5 seconds or so, that might be worth considering cardiology consultation. But if they're happening just erratically every few hours apart or even a few minutes apart without any major debilitating symptoms, it's usually something that's considered benign.
My son is almost 17. He's had a low heart rate for a few months, 45 to 50 BPM. He's had an ECG. It was clear, a waking echo and a halter. The smartwatch flagged it as it was dropping during the night. I mean, your heart rate does drop.
Oh, exactly, yeah. Nocturnal heart rate drops are very standard. There's two sets of nerves that supply your heart. There's sympathetic and there's parasympathetic. Without going into too much detail, the parasympathetic, or the one that slows the heart down, tends to be a lot more prime when you're asleep, allowing for heart rates even down into the 30s in some patients that I've known before, especially fit young athletes like I assume this young man is.
I'm a perimenopausal woman, almost 50. I have a mid-range Garmin, and my resting heart rate, it tells me, is 57 on average for the last 12 months, which is down from 60 a year ago. I'm not overweight, but I'm not a very fit person. Is my resting heart rate too low? I'm on HRT for the last 2 years, but I'm not on any other medication.
I would say 57 is quite allowable. Yeah. I wouldn't have particular concerns about a heart rate of 57, even though it's a little bit of vacillation between, you know, one period of testing and the next. Mm. It's still overall quite allowable and acceptable.
And then Andrew from Zurich says, I'm not fit and my pulse is in the 40s. I got an ECG, did a stress test, nothing showed up at all. Is it lucky, Andrew?
I think so, to be honest with you. As tortoises will inevitably tell you, we all only get a certain number of heartbeats in our lifetime. And I have a strong suspicion that Andrew is just... a wave of evolution unto himself, and hopefully we'll have many more years of good health, even in the absence of regular exercise.
My dad is 86. He was diagnosed with advanced heart failure 2 years ago after a heart attack. We feel he's going downhill and becoming more tired and breathless. Is there anything that can be done to make him function better, or is this just the nature of the disease? It's hard to watch him becoming weaker.
I'm obviously very sorry to hear about that. My first recommendation every time would be to seek out medical attention in those instances. There certainly can be a tendency to heightened fatigue, fluid aggregation, maybe even a risk for atrial arrhythmias like we're talking about in patients that have had previous heart attacks and ischemic heart disease. So in an instant like that where fluid accumulation might be provoking the symptoms, I would recommend maybe presenting to the emergency department or a rapid access cardiology clinic.
What does heart failure actually mean?
It's essentially heart inefficiency or heart dysfunction.
It can happen. You improve it?
You can, actually. There's a number of medications that are very, very good to knit the heart back together. They're called anti-remodeling medications. And anybody with proven history of heart failure should be offered them. Past that, cardiac rehabilitation, which is quite available across town in a number of hospitals and even in the community, would be something to consider. It's just a means of actually helping your heart to strengthen up on its own.
Okay, well, fascinating stuff. Dr. Jim O'Brien, consultant cardiologist at the Mater Private in Dublin. Thank you very much for joining us in studio this morning.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.